Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to this, our latest Facebook Live interview. I'm joined today by Kevin Dallas, the chairman of the Bermuda Tourism Authority. Thank you for sparing some time today.
Thank you for coming, Jeremy.
It was a little over a year ago that we first sat down together, and then it was to introduce you to Bermuda and say welcome to your new job. How's it been since then?
Yes, that feels like it was a lifetime ago, Jeremy.
How has the job been? Has it met up to your expectations?
There are good days and bad days, but I've got to say, I have not regretted this decision for a moment, and I love every minute of being here.
Has it gone according to plan?
I'm not sure that there really was a plan. There's certainly been things that were expected, things that were unexpected. You know, I think actually one of the first things we did when I got here a year ago was sit down and make a plan for 2017, knowing that we needed to make a longer-term plan. And actually that's one of the big projects that's going on here at the moment, is the writing of the next chapter of the National Tourism Plan, which is a project that's in flight right now.
How long before that's finished, do you think?
So we're aiming to get the bulk of the work done before the summer. But we're going to spend the summer months socializing that work and getting more input from people, with a goal to finalize it and really roll it out to the public at the Tourism Summit, which this year will be in October.
And that plan will go on for how many years?
So that will be a five-year strategy. So that will be, you know, the next chapter of the National Tourism Plan that builds on the last chapter, which was, of course, the National Tourism Plan of 2012. Mm. But I think any five-year plan is really a kind of a five-year direction of travel and a two-year very specific plan. And then beyond that, you know, you're trying to predict the future a little too much.
Anything you can tell us about it? Anything specific?
Well, I don't think we are going to radically change direction. So I think the focus that we've had on investing our limited marketing budget in our core markets, you know, and in our gateway cities, I think will continue. I think the segmentation of our visitors that we rolled out at the Tourism Summit last year is something that we're very comfortable with and going to build on rather than change from in the National Tourism Plan.
Right. You
know, similarly, I think the positioning and the rebranding of Bermuda as a destination that we did, that idea that Bermuda should really authentically be itself rather than relying on marketing gimmicks, I think are all themes that will continue.
Before there were three hubs. Are mm-hmm. they going to continue?
So we've been looking at the effectiveness of the hub strategy. I think there have been things that have worked and things that haven't. I think you'll see the next iteration of it in the next plan.
So we're going to still be looking at three essential hubs.
There were actually originally five in the National Tourism Plan of 2012. But whether or not those are the right five, you know, one of which was loosely defined as everything that happens on the water, I think is to be determined.
Okay. Today, of course, earlier on today, and you can watch it on Burr News still, you had a press conference talking about the first quarter tourism stats. Mm-hmm. If you can, because there's a lot to digest, give me your three biggest takeouts.
So the first is that we managed to achieve, I think, phenomenal growth. So we delivered a 25% increase in visitor spending on top of a 21% increase in leisure air arrivals. So that's the first piece of big news. The second piece of news, I think, is that we managed to do that against some pretty tough headwinds, actually. So we didn't have the positive momentum and buzz of an America's Cup. We had, of course, the international dialogue around the Domestic Partnership Act that was in some
ways
unhelpful.
Which is ongoing. We'll come on to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And third, you know, in a mix of good and bad, we had a significant amount of our hotel inventory offline in the first quarter. And the good there is that that's because they're investing in our tourism product. The bad is that, of course, those rooms weren't available to be filled by visitors. Mm. I think the third big takeaway for me is that despite the fact that in the first quarter of last year we had a large number of extended stay guests in particular, all of Land Rover Bar,
yeah.
who were staying in our hotels. Actually, our hotels achieved a 2% increase in occupancy and a 6.5% increase in what they call RevPAR, which is revenue per available hotel room, which is really healthy growth off the back of what was a perhaps a slightly inflated number in the first quarter of last year.
You talk about the rise in arrivals. If you look at the overall figures, quarter on quarter, it was actually a rise of 19, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Why was that?
Wait, say that one again, Drew.
If I'm reading the figures right,
mm-hmm.
if you look on quarter, the actual rise in visitors was just 19?
You mean looking at Q4 of last year versus Q1 of this year, yep.
If I'm reading it right, yeah.
That's right. So we compare Q1 of this year to Q1 of last year, which is actually up by more like 4,000.
Okay, I've completely reading the figures wrong, because I know there was a big crash in the numbers of cruise ships. We've made a big difference.
There is. So, you're looking at the overall visitor arrivals.
Yeah, you have
visitor
arrivals.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's roughly flat. And the reason that's flat is that small changes in the cruise schedule can make a big impact on the number of total visitor arrivals.
Mm.
So we had three ships that were due to visit us in the first quarter that couldn't call because of weather. One of those was rescheduled. Two of those just didn't come. So those visits were just canceled because they were originally part of a repositioning cruise.
Right.
So while overall visitor arrivals were flat because of that deflation in the cruise market, actually, air arrivals, which is the more important number, were up significantly. And those are the visitors that spend 10 times what a cruise visitor spends.
We'll come on to the details about that in a second. But first of all, I wanted to ask, it yet again underscores, or it seems to yet again underscore, the importance of air arrivals to Bermuda. They're the ones that bring more people. They're the ones that spend more money. What are you doing to get more? Because the reason I ask that is, as I mentioned before, we've met before. One of the things we talked about was getting competition for BA, and you did mention that at the time of the interview you were about to go to some big international conference and talk about air flights and destinations. What's happened to all that since then?
Well, so the biggest change since a year ago, of course, is the expansion of JetBlue service, with them adding a second daily service from New York in season. And them
which you've called the Boston Boom, haven't you?
Well, so that's the other flight that JetBlue added, which is they've added year-round service from Boston. And that started last May. But this is the first quarter where we've had the benefit of that flight. And we called it the Boston Boom because we basically doubled the amount of air capacity out of Boston into Bermuda. And we saw a 73% increase in the number of visitors coming from Boston. Air visitors are, we think, you know, by far the most important because they do contribute the most economically to the island. They spend 10 times what a cruise visitor spends here on the island. But that doesn't mean the cruise industry isn't important. And something I would flag is that, you know, although because we deal in very small numbers for a cruise in that first quarter, you know, we can have a big percentage drop. Actually, that's not symptomatic of what the full year is likely to be for cruise. Because we know how many callers we're going to get, we have a pretty good idea going into it by what our cruise season will look like. And, you know, barring the unforeseeable, like any hurricane interruption, you know, we will have the strongest cruise season we've ever had. And be up by high single digits.
I think it's the biggest number of cruise ship visitors ever, isn't it?
We'll have the biggest number of visits and the biggest number of cruise visitors Bermuda's ever had. That's a function of two things, Jeremy. The first is a larger ship. So we have NCL swapping out one regular caller for a larger ship. And the other is that the cruise season has gotten longer. So we, of course, have our existing relationships with Royal Caribbean and NCL, and their ships as regular callers dominate the peak summer season. As we've looked at how we can work with other partners, in particular with Carnival and with Disney, we've realized that the weather on the either side of the summer, but in particular in the fall, is great for cruise visitors. And so this year, the cruise season will run much later than it has in previous years.
So I want to go back to, I interrupted, it's my fault. I want to go back to this, the conference about bringing more flights. You started answering that and I interrupted you.
Yeah.
Was there any other success apart from Boston?
So route development is a long-term game. And we are lucky to have both the Ministry of Transport and now Skyport.
Skyport, yeah.
You know, as a partner in that. So, you know, discussions that we're having now with airlines, we hope will bear fruit in a year or 2 years or even beyond that. You know, for us, the priority really is about getting more competition and more capacity on existing routes. We would like to find year-round service out of Washington. We would like to see year-round service from Newark, a longer season, or year-round service from Charlotte. You know, we would like to concentrate on getting more capacity out of our existing cities and to push fares down on those routes before we look at new markets. The obvious question, of course, is the UK.
Yes.
We have not yet been successful in finding another carrier to serve Bermuda from the UK. We have actually been working with British Airways to see how we could work more effectively together to target attractive visitors for Bermuda and activate them. But that's a work in progress.
Because with the so-called Boston boom thing, you said at the press conference that you were working with JetBlue. Mm-hmm. And you were putting $1 million of BTA mm-hmm. money to help them promote.
Yeah.
Is that a model that could work with BA? Is that a model that could work with other European airlines or American airlines?
Potentially, yes. So it's important to understand that the agreement that we have with JetBlue is a co-marketing agreement. Mm. So we don't pay JetBlue anything. What we did was we agreed with JetBlue that in exchange for them opening up new service to Bermuda, we would invest alongside them in marketing and promoting that service to Bermuda. So for anybody, for example, that saw the Bermuda Calling, a viral campaign that was done last summer in New York with JetBlue, that's the kind of example of where that money goes.
Are you looking to do that with other airlines?
Yeah. So we think that's an effective model. We think that is a better model than revenue guarantees, where, you know, the historic criticism is that you are paying airlines to fly empty planes. Mm. That's not something that we would do. That's not in our charter anyway. But we believe that this co-marketing, where we work together to drive demand to the destination, you know, on our new partner's flight, is the way to go.
You did mention earlier on, and in the press conference, that some of the hotels are partially closed or all closed. This is Tucker's. If they'd been open, if the renovations they were doing weren't being done then, would we have seen more arrivals? Would we have seen more visitors?
So it's impossible to know.
But was there enough demand, do you think?
What is the case is that if I look at the properties that were closed, you know, if you take Rosewood Bermuda, we had a whole quarter where they were offline and where we lost the benefit of having that brand and their marketing present in the market. And of course, we had Grotto Bay that was closed for a week, and Grotto Bay is traditionally one of our strongest performers in the winter months. So I think, you know, I have no doubt that had they been open, they would have had a significant number of visitors there. How many of those visitors still chose to come and stay somewhere else versus how many of them have been displaced, we'll never know.
There's no way of judging by previous studies? Or
not really, no.
One of the interesting stats in the figures today was the ages of people who are coming mm-hmm. here. I noticed that I've categorized them for ease. 0 to 24 and 13, 35 to 64-year-olds, that was up between 19 and 45%. And 24 to 34-year-olds were up only 4.7%.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a deliberate strategy? You're looking at those particular brackets?
No. So I think
it's
what's
kind of
happening,
a strange thing to see.
Yeah,
with
a bit of a donut.
The donut there, yeah.
I think for that you need to take, if we look at the 18 or 24-month perspective, I think what we see is that middle segment has grown an awful lot in the last 2 years. So we're growing by a smaller percentage, but on a rapidly growing base. So overall, you know, if we look at the last 2 years, 85% of that growth was coming from visitors that are under 45.
Right.
And what has happened this quarter is that we seem to have activated, you know, even we've brought in more families. Mm. So we've brought in folks that are coming with younger children. And we've seen all segments rise for the first time in quite a while.
Is this a deliberate strategy to get families in?
So it was at the Tourism Summit last year that we unveiled the segmentation work that we did to better group and classify our visitors. And we identified five segments of visitors who are present in our target market. So in the United States, we know where they are, and we know how many there are, and we know how to find them. And we know from our data that they are already coming to Bermuda in some number. And so we were able to look at, for these five segments, what's the universe look like, and then what's the population that's coming to Bermuda. And I think there are a number of things in that that surprise people. The first is that traditional visitor that we all know, you know, that 50 and 60-something empty nester whose kids have grown up, moved away, you know, who's a repeat visitor to Bermuda. Today, those folks only make up about a third of our visitors, and I think that really surprised people. But one of the other things that we saw was that while in the last 2 years we've really focused on growing what we called adventure seekers and experience enthusiasts, so younger folks who are still high income can still afford Bermuda, but who either don't have children or whose children are young enough that they are perhaps leaving them at home when they go to Bermuda, well, we've really focused on growing that. We identified that there is a segment of what we called active families. They make up less than 10% of our visitor mix today, but they are coming. And these are folks who are in their 40s, most likely, who have children that are old enough to be somewhat independently mobile. And we discovered that these folks are coming to Bermuda and that they like Bermuda, and that they're somewhat underrepresented versus our, if you want, universe of possible travelers. So we see this as an opportunity. It's not the only opportunity, yeah, but it is an opportunity, and it's one that we've been out talking about since the Tourism Summit. It's also one where we put some marketing effort behind that in both the fall and the winter. So, for example, we developed new content for GoToBermuda.com around family breaks and, in fact, a family spring break oriented around Easter.
Right.
And we hosted Jackie Gifford, who is the travel director of Travel and Leisure. We actually hosted her as part of the America's Cup hospitality that we did. She loved Bermuda. She came back this fall with her husband and their child. And they had an active family vacation in Bermuda. She wrote about it, and it was that article that got us the April cover of Travel and Leisure.
Are families a good category to target in the sense that they've got a high disposable income? I'm looking at my own personal situation, and I have not got a high disposable income.
Yeah, so to be clear, we're targeting families that do have a household income of $100,000 a year or more. And we know that Bermuda can be expensive for them. We also know that there are some shortcomings in the experience we're able to offer them today. So part of the dialogue that we started at the Tourism Summit was asking our stakeholders to start to think about what needs to change if active families are going to be a segment that we really want to pursue. So, you know, to give you an example, in introducing the Twizy, we have provided a vehicle that really works for those experience enthusiasts, those folks coming in couples who want their independence, who perhaps don't want a scooter. That's a great solution for them. That is not a great solution for an active family. So, you know, we've fed some of that in, for example, to the Ministry of Transport's green paper actually, how do we want families to get around, and how will we make it easier for them than it is today, you know, if that's a mix of public transport or any kind of ride sharing. We'll have to wait and see what the green paper says. But we think that's the kind of thing that we should be thinking about if we really want to go after this segment of visitors.
So in terms of the strategies, marketing strategy is going to be pretty much more of the same?
Yeah. So, you know, we know that what we've been doing is working, and we know that idea of positioning Bermuda as a place that is set apart from the Caribbean, that is unique geographically and culturally, that is a place where actually lots of cultures are swirling together to create an experience that our visitors find to be both unique and comfortably familiar, yet very far from their everyday life. So something that feels comfortable and they're immediately at home, but is quite different from what they do day to day. And we found that idea is something that is really resonating with visitors. And what we're doing then to activate that is also working. So we continue to get ever more focused on how we can improve the ROI on the return on our digital marketing. But that basic idea will stay the same.
Very quickly, a couple of other points on the statistics today before we move on. Mm-hmm. I noticed the length of stay overall has fallen mm-hmm. by 10%, but people are spending more. Mm-hmm. What's going on here?
So one of the things that's driving that, and in particular, actually, I think you'll find length of stay fell significantly in vacation rentals, while it was down a little bit for hotel visitors. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's driving that is the America's Cup. So we had a large number of extended stay guests that brought up the averages in the first quarter of last year. And we don't have those folks this year. So that's the distortion I think you're seeing in those numbers.
Okay, I wanted to come on to the America's Cup next. Yep. Just one more question on this. The rental sector is still very small. Mm-hmm. 8% of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's been a lot of talk about Airbnb. There's been a lot of talk about fees for Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
Is this an area you see of growth?
So the vacation rental market doubled last year. So the number of Airbnb listings doubled, and then the number of folks staying in Airbnb doubled, or staying in vacation rental doubled. So while it's still a relatively small share, it is growing.
And although
their share slipped slightly in this quarter because of that shorter length of stay and those fewer extended stay guests, overall it still increased in volume. And we still see that as a major opportunity for growth.
Clearly, if it's doubling. Yeah.
And it's still one way in which, or another way in which, Bermudian homeowners can become part of the tourism economy and participate in the growth that we're seeing in tourism.
Venture the America's Cup has been a theme. Unbelievably, it's almost exactly a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Time does fly indeed. Again, when I interviewed you last year, and I've been back on the tapes, so this is a direct quote.
Uh-oh.
You said the AC, quotes, had the potential to turbocharge the direction we are going. And he went on to say it was much more about the exposure and how we put on a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been turbocharged? Will it be turbocharged?
So, I mean, I think if I go back to
that?
The... No. If I go back to the travel and leisure example, Jackie Gifford wouldn't have been here last May if not for the America's Cup, and then she wouldn't have been back this fall, and we wouldn't be the April cover of travel and leisure.
That's one way of turbocharging, mm-hmm. but I suppose what people want to see is boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think a 25% increase in visitors in what is traditionally our most difficult quarter is anything other than turbocharged.
It depends on what happens now, isn't it?
Well, I think if we look at the quarter ahead, again, there's an America's Cup effect in there that we have to take out as we look at what the structural growth and the real health of the market looks like.
Is that going to be a problem? Because I was going to ask, you're comparing quarters and quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Very disfavorably in many ways. Is mm-hmm. that going to be an issue for you?
So I think the second quarter will clearly be a challenging quarter-to-quarter comparison. I think when we look at what happened in the America's Cup last year, the real win was in revenue for our hoteliers and for our other stakeholders. It wasn't necessarily in pure visitor volume, but if I reflect on the second quarter of last year, I think RevPAR, that revenue per available hotel room, climbed 30%.
Right.
I think that will be that's a tough act to follow in the second quarter.
Have you got any targets that you want to hit that might come as close to that as possible that will tell you mm-hmm. that tourism is still up on the upward trend?
So we certainly set corporate goals for the year. We are targeting growth.
Mm.
If we maintain what we did last year, then that's actually structural growth catching up to that America's Cup effect, and that tells us that we're on a good trajectory. One of the things that we will do as part of the National Tourism Plan is a refresh of what do we think the long-term full potential looks like, and what numbers should we be happy with next year and 5 years
from now.
But also
wondering, if you've got any numbers that you would be mm-hmm. happy with?
We're reworking those now part of the National Tourism Plan.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And can you list anything specifically that has happened or is ongoing to take advantage of the legacy of the AC, mm-hmm. that the BTA has done.
Well, we just had one last week, which is the ITU World Triathlon Series is effectively a legacy event.
Why?
Because when we went to bid for that event, it was actually Bermuda's successful hosting of the America's Cup qualifier round that was essential to convincing the ITU that Bermuda could manage an event of the size that we had on Front Street just last week. And the ITU is, of course, a three-year deal with an opportunity for Bermuda now to bid for the finals in 2021. And I think, off the back of the fact that we got that event to Bermuda and that we leveraged a lot of the Bermudian expertise from the America's Cup to deliver the World Triathlon Series and did it really well, now positions us well for the finals.
I was going to ask you about the triathlon. Are there other events like this that you'd like to get, that you are going to bid for, even if you can't be specific?
So, we're working with the Ministry of Tourism and Economic Development around what is a good fit for Bermuda. There are a lot of inbound proposals that we get. There aren't many out there that would tick all the boxes of what it is that we're looking for, which is something that's a good brand fit with Bermuda, something that creates a direct economic benefit for Bermuda, something that, if you want, rings the cash register, something that has sponsor activation opportunities, a way for local and international businesses to get involved and amplify that economic effect in their own brand. We're looking for something that fits the island's infrastructure and environment, something that isn't damaging to us to do. And lastly, we're looking for something that's a good fit with our community, something that is inclusive in which everyone can get behind. The triathlon, I think, is a great example of something that does tick all those boxes, although we're going to do an impact report with a third party in order to make sure that was true. But we're looking for other events like that. And one of the things that we're doing is, after our restructuring in January, we are actually hiring in a sports director to help us with outbound looking for opportunities. At the moment, we're very responsive to opportunities we see, but we don't know what we're not seeing, and we want to be systematic and organized in going after those events and in partnership with government.
Was the in terms of column inches and screen time, was the triathlon a success for you?
So the triathlon was definitely a success on that metric. We were of course on NBC Sports, we were on BBC, we were on Canadian Broadcasting, so we had coverage in our three key markets. The other thing which it did, of course, was it highlighted Bermuda as a fantastic place for an active vacation or a sports vacation. In these critical spring months. So in that idea of connecting the kind of experience you can have Bermuda to the different seasons, it clearly ticks that box as well. I think we'll obviously put a value on the media exposure we got once it's all been tallied up, and we'll report that to the public when it's done.
We had a Facebook conversation last week about this, but you are having this for the next 2 years in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Is there any reason for that and not spreading it out to, like, Clearwater, for instance, which is, to me at least, is more photogenic, if that's the kind of thing you're looking for?
Well, it depends on what you mean by photogenic. I happen to think that Hamilton is beautiful, and I think that a triathlon where you can swim in the harbor of the capital city is kind of rare. There aren't many places in the world that are so pristine that is possible and healthy. So what we were trying to do with the ITU is to craft a course that was interesting to spectators, interesting to viewers, interesting to athletes, and that doesn't unnecessarily inconvenience too much of the population. So we were looking for something that ticked all of those boxes. You're right, Southside would look lovely to viewers, but it would only show a side of Bermuda that they see a lot of, whereas this shows a different side of Bermuda. This also created an opportunity where it was easier for spectators to participate and be part of the event because it was so central. And it created a course that was really interesting. So one of the things that's been great, and again, we will measure this quantitatively, but the anecdotal feedback from both the elite racers as well as the amateurs, what are called the age groupers, was about what a great course it was. I mean, you know, personally, I don't understand it, but they loved going up Corkscrew Hill.
I don't understand that.
Repeatedly.
I keep mentioning the press conference, but it's worth referring to. You did say there that the issue of same-sex marriage has caused some negative headlines. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of negative headlines. What's the BTA done to counter them?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, ever since the law first passed, we have been actively monitoring what's called the conversation.
Mm.
So we and our media partners and agencies have been monitoring that discourse, and we've been active participants in it. So we have reached out on behalf of Bermuda to journalists. We've had a number of interviews with interested publications. We've also partnered with government to help them with things like the FAQs that they developed for the government websites to help explain the story. And I think what we've seen is that the issue, superficially, does boil down to an unattractive headline. You know, in a 140-character tweet, it's impossible for most people to get the depth and complication of the issue. But where we've engaged with folks that are interested in understanding more, we've found that actually we've had some success in turning some views around.
Right.
We have also engaged everybody that wrote. So we've had hundreds, if not thousands, of messages from people who felt strongly about this issue. And we have written back to and engaged with each of them. We've also been working with our hotel partners around any impacted group business. So there are a number of groups that questioned whether or not Bermuda was a place that they wanted to come.
Cancellation, because yeah. Bernie's run that story.
I would say that we've certainly seen one on Bernie's. And we've intervened where asked by our hotel partners to help explain and provide some of the context to the story that it takes some of the concern away.
Has there actually been any other? We mentioned one cancellation. Do you know of any others?
So there are certainly a number of groups that have expressed concern. You know, what those groups will do, I think it's too soon to say.
Are they substantial ones?
There are some substantial groups, yes. And the bigger issue is not knowing what lost opportunity there might be. So, you know, what do we not make the shortlist of because we didn't have the opportunity to intervene and to have the conversation. And that's why it's important that we've looked for the opportunities that we have with the media to get a deeper, richer exploration of the issue out into the public domain. The
problem for you is it's not over yet, is it, by any means? And we've got a court case at the end of this month with Carnival Cruises and, I should say the Art Bermuda case, which has been partly financed, by Carnival Cruises.
Mm-hmm.
These headlines aren't going to go away for you, are they?
No, so we've been monitoring this versus comparable situations. So, for example, looking at the HB2 issue in North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, one of the things we know is that the conversation doesn't end. It will bubble along in the background at a diminished level. And then, yes, trigger events, anything positive or, in some people's eyes, negative, however you want to look at it, any kind of event related to the issue will cause a new spike in the conversation.
When Carnival Cruises announced that it was going to help fund this particular court case, the CEO was on an American TV channel. I forget which one it was. But he was quoted as, I listened to it, and he said that if we discover that people do not want to go to Bermuda, then obviously we would not go there. I mean, that must chill you, mustn't it, to hear something like that from a CEO of Carnival Cruises?
Well, you know, I think Carnival is complicated because, of course, Carnival are a regular caller to Bermuda, but not one of our preferred strategic partners.
But the fact that he's saying that, he has such stature in the industry.
But Carnival are also a corporate citizen in Bermuda. Their ships are on our shipping registry. And I think the challenge for them is one of where they have activists calling for them to leave the shipping registry more than they have them calling on them to not call on Bermuda. We'll have to see how that plays out.
Have you heard, talked to any other cruise lines about this who are registered here who can't do marriages on their ships?
So Carnival are the major cruise line that is, they're on the shipping registry. And, you know, I think they're the ones that had generated some PR for themselves when they started doing it. And they are the ones that have therefore kind of attracted the bulk of the feedback following this decision.
Couple of final questions. There was a lot of about the BT in the news about the restructuring, and you, I'm not sure if it's happened. You urged you to make 6 redundancies, and the government asked about an audit. What's going on with the audit and the redundancies? Yeah. Have they happened?
So we made 4 positions redundant, and three were full time staff, and one was a contractor. 2 were here in Bermuda. One was here in Bermuda, and three were in New York. Those 4 staff have now moved on, but we created 6 new positions out of that, and I'm pleased to say that four of those have been hired. 3 of them are Bermudian. One is a spouse of a Bermudian, and we have 2 more to go, and they're perhaps the 2 most specialist roles.
Is that the sports director?
Sports director, and actually a market intelligence role. Somebody who has some expertise in working with third-party databases to help with some of that outbound mining for opportunities for Bermuda against a given set of criteria.
And where's the audit at?
So, I mean, I think that would have to be a question for the ministry.
But you started, presumably.
Well, we were just audited by both the Auditor General, who's finishing up their annual audit of us, and actually by internal audit, who have jurisdiction over the independent authorities and the Quangos as well. So we've just had both of them through. So we'll have to see if there's anything else.
All right, because this appeared to be another audit.
Not that we're actively engaged in today, although I know that government did want to review whether or not they felt that the BTA's hiring and staff development practices were sound and fair to Bermudians. I certainly think that, you know, any objective look at those will say that the Bermuda Tourism Authority is probably among the best in class at, you know, that kind of perspective on, do we hire Bermudians, do we develop Bermudians, and are we providing the right promotion opportunities for Bermudians?
October the 31st is Halloween, and we have 6 cruise ships in the same day. Is this going to be Nightmare on Front Street, or are we going to cope?
No, it's going to be a fantastic day because it is going to be the absolute proof that Bermuda's cruise season, you know, now runs from April to November, and we're looking forward to a really busy fall season for all of our tourism partners that rely on the cruise trade.
Are people geared up for this? Mm-hmm. Are they getting geared up for this? 25,000 people.
So we have some work to do to make sure that all of our stakeholders are aware of the extended season and aware that, you know, peak day and ship count this year will be, yes, October 31st. That probably won't be the peak day in cruise visitors, by the way. Those ships are smaller than our regular callers that call in season. But it clearly does create a logistical challenge for us, and one that we're working with all of our stakeholders and government to make sure that everyone is aware of and ready for.
I think I might stay on Front Street on that day. Mr. Dallas, thank you very much for your time.
Thank
that was
you.
A great pleasure. Cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.